like to call to order the Madison Plains Board of Education meeting. Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Here.
Mr. Dodds?
Here.
Mr. Butts?
Here.
Mr. Hunter?
Here.
Mr. Morlock?
Present.
Mr. Detweiler and I are also present.
Stand for Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have five people registered to speak tonight. It'll go 6 minutes each. So Tina Seaburn. You're first.
Hello. I am Tina Seaburn. I teach fifth grade math and science in the intermediate building. And tonight I wish to discuss some concerns my colleagues and I have with the proposed dress code policy. I'm not here to minimize the need for professional standards or expectations within our district, rather to discuss the manner in which the policy came about and some of the current details within this policy. At Madison Plains, we have formed several committees for everything we do. Our opinions as educators are usually valued, and we've had input in decisions which affect our classrooms, our academics, our students, etc. However, within this board policy, that was simply not the case. Our opinions were asked, but we felt only after the policy was drafted and expectations were already mentioned and put into place. This has caused confusion and an abundance of questions, as well as low morale within our staff. In regards to the current proposal specifically, the specificity of it is actually seeming to cause more questions and alludes to thoughts that our staff is not taking pride in where they work and are currently being unprofessional. Our dress attire should not define us as educators. Madison Plains is doing wonderful things academically. Our scores from last year that we received on Monday prove this. After looking at some other academically successful school districts, the dress codes in place allow the educators to also have an input and use their best judgment as to what works within their individual classroom settings, while still maintaining a level of professionalism. Research has proven that the number one influence in an educator's success in teaching is feeling supported by their administration and having a positive work environment. That was mentioned in a book I recently read by Brad Olson called Teaching for Success. When administrators, teachers, staff, students, and parents form communities and use productive conversation while collaborating and building relationships, learning takes place not only within the students but also with the teachers. The environment in which teachers work plays a much larger role in their success than any other factor in education. This proposed dress code and its minimal input from our staff has not created that positive working environment described above. Our mission, which is stated online here at Madison Plains, is to provide the best opportunity for each student to become successful in higher learning and become productive, contributing, responsible citizens, thus enabling them to realize their full potential as citizens of their community and world. In order to accomplish this mission, our staff to be successful in implementing it, we firmly believe our teachers have to buy into all policies put in place which have an effect in our classrooms, as well as having that support from administration and positive working environment. In conclusion, I'm asking the board tonight to reconsider your vote on the adoption of the proposed dress code in order to comprise a committee of staff members at all grade levels to aid in the decision making of a professional dress code. Doing so will allow staff to buy into such policy and have a continued sense of support from our administration in order to successfully accomplish our mission statement that we have here at Madison Plains Local Schools. Thank you.
Jesse Mace.
Hi, I'm Jesse Mace. For any of you who don't know me, I teach art K-6 here at Madison Plains. I'm here tonight to represent my colleagues, but I'm not here to complain about specifics of the dress code or to suggest that we teachers should be anything less than professional in our appearance. Instead, I'd like to discuss the manner in which the dress code was developed and how it caused confusion and concern for the teaching staff here at Madison Plains. I'd also like to offer an alternative solution moving forward. All teachers know that it's a best practice to include students in the decision-making process. It provides buy-in and accountability within our classrooms. So each year, when I start out in August, I ask the students for input when we talk about our expectations for our classroom. We discuss what seems most fair and productive together as a group. Would it be easier for me to hand them a list of 10 rules that I made up? It would, but then my students wouldn't have ownership. It wouldn't be our expectations, it would just be my expectations. As a teaching staff, we feel that the expectations set forth in this dress code are not our own expectations, but someone else's. Because we weren't involved directly in the code's development, it's been difficult to clearly understand and define how it will affect each one of us in our very diverse classroom settings. As you'll hear from others tonight, it's caused genuine concern for much of our staff, and it's fostered very little buy-in. There was a minimal number of avenues for us to respond to the dress code, but because it had already been drafted prior to any teacher involvement, any feedback that we gave was purely reactionary. Rather than an open discourse or an opportunity to shape what the dress code looked like, we could only voice our opposition after the fact through writing a public blog post or emailing the superintendent directly. It was presented to a board policy review committee, but only after it had already been developed. Moving forward, I would ask the members of this board to withdraw their current policy so that we can develop a collaborative one together. We're not asking to do away with the dress code completely, but we are in favor of doing it right. Ideally, we'd like to see the formation of a true committee that's made up of teachers from many grade levels and content areas here at Madison Plains. We welcome transparency and open dialogue with all teachers during the creation of the dress code so that everyone feels accounted for and accountable. Thanks.
Her voucher.
Thanks for giving me your time. I don't have much of a voice, sorry about that. But I'm on here to speak on behalf of the custodians. I know that policy says we can't wear shorts and tennis shoes, only shorts in the summertime. And I know the old saying is the custodians just lean on a broom and don't do a whole lot. But if all these people in here probably attest that I do stay busy, I'm busy all the time. We have to clean up after ball games, basketball games, and get up in the bleachers, get underneath of them, clean it all up. And so we just feel like we'd like to have the option to be able to wear shorts and tennis shoes. I did bring in a magazine that we could order out of. I'd like for it to pass it around, let everybody take a look at it. It's actually pretty sharp stuff in there. And I'd just like to maybe just pass it around, let everybody take a look at it. But we would like to have the option to wear shorts and tennis shoes. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Joni Boyle.
Good evening. I'd like to take a few minutes and get some clarity and transparency from you, the Madison Plains Board of Education. My topic is about the dress code. There are different teaching positions in our district, and that needs latitude with the dress code. Our correspondence so far has been evasive. Moving forward from Mr. Detweiler's email, quote, directors, principals may develop alternative guidelines for the requirements of specific job duties and activities with prior approval from the superintendent. That's why I'm here tonight. I am one of three physical education and health teachers in the district, and we would like to know what your specific guidelines are. Physical education involves a lot of movement on all levels. We run, jump, throw, catch, pivot, eye-hand coordination, use of proper equipment. We need to be able not only to explain, but show our students the proper skills. The way for this to happen successfully is for us to model appropriate clothing, as well as being able to keep our students and myself safe by doing these different movements. PE teachers' attire should include, but not limited to, shorts from August to October possibly, and May to the end of school because of the temperatures, and being outside for our content area. Along with shorts, we would like to have the opportunity at that point to wear appropriate t-shirts. Sweatpants and sweatshirts, and we like to have sweatshirts because we like to support our success of former students, Mrs. Cooley, you know what this is all about, Ohio Dominican, when we sent three of our students this year. So we would like to also show support to our former students that we have had. So Ohio Dominican, Shawnee State, Wilmington, just to name a few. Along with that, we also have to take care of our feet, since that's where most of us are on our legs and feet all day long. So not only do physical education teachers, I would like to see my other colleagues have the opportunity to wear and rotate proper foot gear. Tennis shoes we need to wear, especially inside on the gym floor, unless you guys want to have a cost of annually refinishing the gym floor. We have athletic teams that need the floor in excellent condition to play their sports, like volleyball and basketball. There are also other dress adaptations. I don't want to just talk about myself, because there are other areas in the high school building that I think also need appropriate attention. This is the ag department. We need to keep our teachers safe, but also when they are showing their students their information, they need to be able to use power tools, dress drills, welding. I don't think they want to burn a hole in a pair of dress clothes, because that gets expensive replacing them too. Also, they're around heavy equipment, farm machinery, because we do have a school farm, and teachers will also have to wear possibly steel-toed shoes, and because of the opportunities, they may have to wear jeans, Carhartts, and other equipment to keep themselves safe. Another area is art class. We work with paint, we work with clay, they work with a pottery wheel. They're up and down, they're on the floor, they're every place, and I don't think we want to ruin clothes on a daily basis. A couple other areas, and Mrs. Hildebrandt, and Mr. Spuller are here, they're science teachers. They go to the land lab. I don't think they want to walk in heels to the land lab every day. So I would like for them to have the appropriate attire for them to take their students to enjoy the land lab that they have worked so hard to have. Also with chemistry, they're dealing with chemicals and liquids and having labs, which is hands-on, so the students still continue to work and learn. A couple others is family consumer science. We used to call it home ec. That's a fancy name now. But Mrs. Holloran has kitchen labs. She's looking at preparation, cooking, and cleanup of all the units at that time too, which are family skills that they need to continue through adulthood. So I'm here tonight to ask for you, the board, the administration, and teachers to work together on this dress code. Settle it, and let's move on to more important topics like educating our students and getting them ready to be productive, responsible citizens in our community. Thank you for your time.
Scott Spoller.
I come before the Board of Education this evening as a representative of the Madison Plains Education Association to discuss the issue of implementation of the dress code. As this is the second and final reading, it's already too late for us to make a change. The teachers in the school system do not want to contest the institution of a dress code, but just really the way in which it was handled. As a school system, we have just concluded another round of negotiations, and it was decided early on that this line item of the dress code would be removed from the table. It was thought that too much energy, effort, and compromises would be needed to make in order for a contract to be approved with the dress code actually involved in it. Instead, it was moved and implemented as a board policy, and now not in the contract language, and therefore truly not a debatable subject. A blog post was set up for the community and the teachers to respond to the new regulations. Overall, the responses were far and away against the dress code, and many questioned why there was a need for one. Mr. Detweiler has responded to the post saying, "The intent of the dress code policy is to provide clarity for the staff as to what is acceptable work attire. And as spoken before this evening, I think it has truly just muddied the waters." As teaching professionals in this district, professional dress is much more of the norm than the exception. If there are exceptions, then they should be handled on a one-on-one basis. More support from the teachers in this district would have been garnered if, as a group, they had been approached and asked their opinions or able to offer up suggestions. It seems as though teachers' voices are often not heard in decisions that truly affect them. The blog or an email is a great opening for a form of discussion, but the listening to and meeting with the stakeholders would have been a much better option. For most of the staff, the addition of a dress code will not change their lives at all. As educated adults, most know what professional dress is and follow it accordingly. What the dress code really might do is slow down the development of a welcoming learning environment for students. Teachers who are involved with the music program, math bee, drama, or other clubs and organizations can no longer wear shirts promoting their efforts. Spirit days are not the only day that approved Madison Plains attire should be worn. School pride and school spirit come in many colors and in many different forms. Are we really MP strong? Preliminary data from last spring's testing says yes. How do we stay MP strong? We build a team. Communication, collaboration, and cooperation seeds need to be planted and cultivated. The current path is not leading that way. As decisions and directives are handed down, the void between a team with one heartbeat is becoming a team divided. Tennis shoes and collared shirts are really not worth arguing over. It just would have been nice to have the opportunity to meet with all the policymakers on the dress code before we had reached this point tonight. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move forward to Mr. Dong's Swanger for the tolls update.
Pass him down, please.
Sure.
Yours?
There you go.
Association for coming out tonight to listen to me. Also want to congratulate the education staff in Madison Plains. Madison Plains is now academically number one in Madison County. And you people are being congratulated on that fine job. Next thing I want to hear is where you place in the state, and I hope that you're all working towards number one. So I'm here tonight with the tolls report, and I came tonight because we've got our goals set up, and I wanted to just go over these. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. I know that several of you have graduated from Madison Plains, and you all read very well. So anyway. But we did get these set up. Most of these are goals that were established last year. And what we're trying to do is to get a measurement of what we're doing with the kids who come to tolls and how successful they are when they leave tolls. And of course, we're career tech oriented, but we are also post-secondary oriented. I think I've said at previous meetings that we all have the same job. Madison Plains is primarily, I know we send, or at least we say we send 75% of our kids on to college. I hope that you're checking that out and finding out what the graduation rate is. I know that at Tolls we are very concerned about what our kids do after they graduate and leave tolls. If we're not preparing them for the world that they're gonna go out in, then we've missed the boat. So anyway, our first goal, which is objective number one, is to increase the retention rate of students to 75% or greater for the class of 2016. Right now, and I think if you'll check back, those numbers of completion are in the packet that you receive on a monthly basis. I assume you are getting those from tolls with the supervisor's reports. I see question marks.
I don't get anything like that.
You don't get, okay. That's why I asked that question, to make sure that I was told that those were going to be sent, because the supervisor's report summarizes everything that's been done during the last month. And I will be on the telephone first thing in the morning. Because you should have those. Our retention rate is not at 75%. The kids that sign up, we lose greater than 25% between sign up and graduation. Now that's a 2-year period. Remember, they sign up at the end of their sophomore year, start as juniors, they complete the program in 2 years. So we're looking at a rate of trying to reach 75% of those that sign up. And one of the first things that we've done is to try and retain the students that sign up. And we've changed tremendously our recruitment program. I know that, what was it, last week? I believe on Tuesday, Tolles was here and talked to the sophomores. They all got a package, probably in the mail, that gave them the opportunity to look at all the programs at Tolles. And then Tolles was down here with all 23 programs represented. And they had a chance to talk with people from those different areas. And then in December, I think it's around the 2nd, there is a sophomore tour day. Sophomores will go to Tolles and have the opportunity to look at least 2 programs that they're possibly interested in. And I think they spend most of the day up there. Next page. We want to increase our technical skill attainment passage rate to 80% for the class of 2016. Currently, we are at 70%. Now, this does not include every program, because every program does not have a national test. This is primarily, we use 2 things. We use national tests where they are available. So we can see whether students have attained the skills they need to be eligible for a position in the workforce. We also use, in those programs that don't have those, we use primarily the SLOs to see what the students have accomplished during their time in the program. So we're trying to raise that to 80%. Current estimate for 2015 is 73%, which is up, but we're trying for higher in 2016. Goal number 3, to increase the related post program placement rate to 70%. And right now I can't tell you off the top of my head what that number is. But I know that it's less than 70%, but what we'd like to do with seniors, at least half of their senior year, we'd like to get them placed in industry. We're using our advisory committee people to establish that. We changed our protocol and so on, picking advisory committee members several years ago. And we have much more productive advisory committees today than we've ever had. We know that our programs, because of the advisory committees, are current state-of-the-art, that kids are getting state-of-the-art skills. But you want to keep in mind that career tech, just like anything else, I know the teachers know this, they're constantly going back to school for some reason. I guess you like it, I don't. But anyway, we know that the skills that we teach these kids 2 to 3 years after they graduate are going to be outdated. because technology today is changing so fast that by the time we get it implemented in the classroom, it's almost like your cell phone. When your cell phone comes out, you think you really got something. I hate to tell you this, but two new cell phones down the road's already on the drawing board by the time you get yours. So it's almost obsolete when you get it. And of course, Apple likes that because they sell more phones that way. Once yours becomes obsolete, you'll have to have the latest technology. And they know that. But anyway, we are trying to get our placement of our students up to a placement rate of 70%, and that's this year. Right now, that number is very close, I think, to 50%, which is one out of every two kids. But we want all of them to have the opportunity to work in industry somewhere before they graduate so they get hands-on skills in the industry, working alongside other people in that same area. And finally, number four, to increase the number of student experience in work-based learning experiences from 222 for the class of 2015 to 250. And this goes along with the last one. It's a matter of getting kids out there, getting them into a job where they can practice the skills that they've learned in class. And you can see, if you look down through the action steps, what the staff intends to do and how they plan to implement those four goals. But they are all measurable, and we'll have some idea of where we stand, hopefully at the end of the year. These goals that are in here are all measurable. A lot of our grade card, actually it's the same problem that you folks have. Some of the information that you'd like to see on that grade card is over a year old. You won't get information from the class of 2015 probably till sometime in 2016. And if you have a problem with that, call your legislator. Because they need to jack up the State Department of Education. That information that comes, it's nice when you get it. Unfortunately, it's a little bit late for us to try and make decisions on and help students to do better. Last year, you accepted the opportunity to place students or to give students the opportunity to learn soft skills as well as academic skills, because we had a program through the Madison County Chamber of Commerce that gave students a certificate if they met a list of qualifications, which after I looked over it, I'm glad I'm not in school. It's a long list, it's a tough list, but they are the soft skills, resumes, interviews, and the skills the kids need on the job. We know from past history that most people who lose their job do not lose it because they're incompetent. Most people who lose their job lose it because they don't get along with one of three people. Either don't get along with the boss, they don't get along with a customer, or they don't get along with somebody that they work with. And those are the soft skills that our kids need, whether they graduate from Madison Plains or whether they graduate from Madison Plains through Tolles. Those soft skills are necessary if they're going to be successful. Last year, we had a grand total of four kids complete that program. And we liked it so well that we gave each of them their own laptop. We're pushing that program a little bit harder this year. And so far, we've got 132 kids signed up to work on that program. Now, 30 some of those are juniors. the rest of them are all seniors who will graduate at the end of this year, but the junior, some of the juniors want to get a jump on it, which is not a bad idea. And I hope that success rate on that comes out at 50% or better. I'd like to say 100%, but I tend to be a realist. And that is a tough program to complete for these kids, but I would happy that many of them were at least interested in giving it a shot. That's all I'm going to cover tonight. If you have any questions, I'll give them a try. The other thing that I want to do, we do have our new Ram Tech lab to the tune of $1.3 million. Is pretty much in place. There's still a couple pieces to come in, but it's rather impressive to see all these robots sitting around in that lab. And if you get a chance and you want to see that, let me know. We'll set up a tour.
Got invited to that first day for the opening day for the 26th.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We all got invited to that.
You all got that. Mm-hmm. Good.
So thank
that
you.
Came out.
Right. Any
okay,
questions
I'll
for Don?
I'll put that in my phone call. Okay.
Without any questions?
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Okay.
Appreciate
and
it.
And as things come up, I'll let you know that they got an open invitation anytime. Come
awesome.
To Cole, see what's going on, see what our kids are doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, move on to Section D, approval of board minutes.
Board work session.
Board work session. I'm sorry. I skipped right by it. Sorry.
Sure.
Go ahead, Ken.
I just
Thank
wanted
you.
To remind the board, if you haven't already looked over the stuff that I dropped off to you last week about House Bill 70, please take a look over that. It's, you know, it's never too late for us to have a resolution for us to the legislature to let them know that what we're doing in Youngstown and potentially all over the state really isn't something that we want to do. And there, a couple years ago, OSBA had something similar go out. I can't remember exactly what it was now, but we, along with over 400 other school districts in the state, sent a resolution to the State House, and they changed their resolution more favorable to school districts. So our voice might be one of 600 right now, but when they get it, it'll be one of 400 to 500, I'm sure. By the time other districts have a chance to decide that. And that's the voice that we need to go to them so that we can keep the local control with the local board. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else for board work session? Okay. We'll move forward to approval of board minutes, Section B.
Madam President, I move that the minutes of September 15th and October 13th 2015 meetings be approved as written.
I'll second that.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Move on to Section E. Mr. Mustang, it's all you.
Thank you, Mrs. Cooley.
Thank you.
I'll jump up here real quick.
Sure.
Hudson, this is going to take an hour.
an hour and a half, something like that.
Start the timer.
The first thing I have to present to you is our September 2015 financial statements. And the only thing I want to highlight about this is our cash flow analysis. The only thing I want to point out is that we are trending fairly close here at the green line to where we were estimating. We're following the same trend. We're a little better off right now just because we have some expenditures that haven't come in yet. I don't know what that is this time of year. But what I wanted to highlight here is our cash position and how that's steadily declining. You can see from 2012 to 2016. Last year at this time, we had a general fund cash balance of $4.8 million. Right now we're sitting at $3.8 million. So just wanted to highlight that leading into my next piece of information, which is a little out of order here, our five-year forecast. that I'll be asking for your approval for. Five-year forecast shows that in 2019, we are in the red to the tune of $1 million at the end of the year. And then in 2020, $3.2 million. The past two forecasts, we have been forecasting that we would be in the red in 2019. Unfortunately, those last two forecasts, fortunately, those last two forecasts were here in the final year. It hasn't changed, so now we're 2 years in the red, which basically tells me that things aren't changing unless we make a big change. That big change, you know, comes through generating additional revenues or drastic cuts, which, you know, to provide the same level of services that we provide here, we don't want to have to do that. So we'd much rather generate additional revenue. We did gain a year. The forecast before the last two, we were projecting to be in the red in 2018. So through cost-saving measures and attrition and different things that we've done with the benefits, you know, we were able to push that back to 2019. So we have accomplished something. It still, though, has kind of settled in now here in 2019. So just wanted to point that out on the forecast. I don't want to go into too much detail because we did go into it in detail at the last special board meeting. Finally, the only other thing I have for you tonight, we have a list of our sold assets here that we've sold through gov deals. That's our disposal process for obsolete assets. Normally, we plan on presenting the list of assets to be sold to the board. This is a new process. We didn't get that accomplished this time, but what I do want to present to you is what was sold, so you have that in your agendas. You can see here we sold 43 items for $5,319. So not a whole lot of money, but the important thing is now we have a regular flow of things and how we dispose of our assets. And that, you know, has a lot of intangibles too. It frees up a lot of space in the district for storage that was being taken up by a lot of obsolete assets that we had. I wanted to point out to everybody that when we do have items up for sale through this auction, it will be listed on our homepage. And it'll be the GovDeals link right down here underneath my section. This won't be here all the time. When we do have auction items up, though, it will be there. We don't want to clutter up our homepage unnecessarily. But when you do click on it, it'll take you right to, hopefully, our page for Madison Plains on the GovDeal website. It's not available. There we go.
Not tonight.
There we go. You can see right now we don't have any items currently for sale. But when we do have items, that's why I left that up there, just to show you guys how that's going to operate. So we will be pulling that down tomorrow. But when we have items up, it'll be listed up here. Anybody can register for a free account and bid on those items. School employees, community members, people in California, whoever wants to bid on them. So it's a really efficient way for us to dispose of assets. But with that, unless you have any questions. That concludes my report.
Thank you. We will move to Section F.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of Treasurer, the September 2015 financial statements be accepted as presented.
I'll second.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Conard?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move upon recommendation of the Treasurer that the 5-year forecast for the period of July 1st, 2015 through June 30th, 2019 be approved as presented.
Before we approve that, that should say
2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2016 through 2020.
As amended.
I'll second.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of Superintendent, the Board accept grant dollars in the amount of $1,000 from Children's Hunger Alliance. These dollars are going to support the effort to expand access to the school breakfast program.
Second.
Discussion.
Mary Sparrow deserves kudos for this because she went on her own and found this grant, applied for it. then after she got it, she said, by the way, we're getting $1,000, which was outstanding work on her part. So awesome. Kudos to Mary for going and finding that.
Thank you, Mary. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll start out with the facility update. The track is now complete. There was the renovations that were completed on those. We repaired the track. We did the inside cut. We had it striped. We can now host any event that we want to have that can for six-lane track. So we are good to go with our track. The second half of the purchase order for the work they did two phases on the repairs of the track. I put a PO in for the first half, did the second half. This new treasurer slapped my hand and said, you got to go before the board and ask for approval.
Right.
And I agree with him. So you will be getting that request tonight to approve that other half of the work that's done on the track. It's still $1,000 less than what they originally estimated to us, so that's a good thing. The HVAC and intermediate building is now complete. Heat and air is now in that building. They've trained our head of maintenance on how to manage the controls in that facility, so that's, and it came in on budget, did not go over. And our flag, the flag raising flag project, we raised right at about $9,000. Good news is we were looking for 10, we ended up not needing 10 because we got a lot of in-kind contributions from our vendors. For example, Sims are the ones that erected the pole out there for no cost to us. Jared Martin, who did the concrete work up at the bus garage, he donated his labor to put the concrete down. So those kind of things offset a lot of that cost. So we are going to be able to put some landscaping out in front of this building. It'll look really nice. It'll kind of U-shape around the pole out there. We're planning on having a big dedication. To let everybody know, that'll be November the 11th. We're shooting for 1 o'clock that day, I believe is the day, the time Kim said. Trying to get past lunch down here, so we're not interfering with that, but getting the crowd out of here before the end of the day. So we're looking at 1 o'clock on November the 11th. Hope to get a lot of dignitaries down here, a lot of veterans, VFW, those type of people. So I think it's gonna be a great celebration. That's it on the facility updates. The champion track purchase order, I talked about that already. The next item we're going to talk about, and you've heard a lot of concerns over some important issues. This is things I really enjoy talking about, and we should talk about, and we should celebrate. One of our employees went well above and beyond what we usually ask of them to do. If she hadn't had the skills and ability to do this, we would have had a serious emergency on our hands. And what we're talking about is our band was going to an event and they were on two different buses, and one of our bus drivers actually was driving the bus, and you'll see in a moment what I'm talking about, was hit. She didn't possess the skills necessary to control that bus, we would have had a catastrophe on our hands. So with that, I'm going to ask Todd to play a video for you guys to watch and see what I'm talking about. And hopefully it'll work. And this is a video that I am sending to Channel 6. And they better play. Thank you.
He knows something.
Now, what you have to realize is, I assume we were going 55 miles an hour down the road, and you had a fully loaded bus loaded with students that was hit. And I'm going to stop right there. I don't know if Sam wants to say anything, because you know that world better than I. And I'll turn it over to you if you like.
Well, if anybody's ever blown a tire before in a car, how hard it is to keep control of a car that has done that, but a bus that weighs a whole lot more than a car, plus with almost 60 bodies, I don't know how many you had in there, but a bus load, it's a big deal. And so very thankful that her driving skills were on task that night. And my kid happens to be one of them that was not on her bus, but the bus following. And not only could it have affected the kids in that first bus, but if something had happened, it could have affected that second bus as well. So I'm so very proud to have her on our team and so thankful for her abilities.
If we could.
From the band kids, and they've all signed it, and some of the band boosters thanking you. And this is some flowers with the coffee cup that you're not allowed to drink on your bus. It says, "We appreciate your efforts and the care you always take. Thanks for your commitment and the difference that you make." Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you.
Celebrating 24 years driving bus for Madison Plains.
Started driving when I was in kindergarten. Don't do the math.
I can't.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
And go ahead.
Oh. More hands.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Very much.
We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
What she's getting from the board is an Eagle Award. That's what students are asking, something exceptional.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. She's the first employee to receive that,
correct?
Right. First one.
First one.
Thank you.
K6 principal Kim LaGault to try to top that.
I could say Mary drove me and I was still alive, so I guess that speaks longer for me. It's been a long time ago. So Mr. Detweiler asked me to talk a little bit about K6 staff and what's been going on down here. As all everybody knows, I'm a former graduate of Madison Plains, and this is definitely a time to be very proud of who we are. I have had the opportunity of working with the majority of the 712 staff for the last 3 years, and knowing the challenges that they faced, and now I've been given the opportunity to work with K6 staff, and knowing the challenges that they face. And really, the challenges aren't a whole lot different, they're just very different worlds. I used to say I go home from the 712 very mentally exhausted, now I go home from the K6 very physically exhausted, because they are two different sides. Some of the things we've gone through change-wise this year is moving to one office, which, as you can imagine, there's a little bit of growing pains when we consolidate to that. Multiple reasons for doing that. Number one, there's a flow. We have one spot when we've had a secretary need to be out for illness, we've got somebody there always having that support, so there's always somebody there for coverage for our kids. And as everybody knows, there's been a lot of need for coverage in our office these past few weeks. I believe it's a very positive change having two administrators in the building. I appreciate everything that Brad Miller's brought to the table, his expertise and knowledge of the staff, and I would assume that the staff hopefully feels that same way as well. It's nice having somebody to bounce ideas off of as well. Our breakfast in the classroom, and I know that we've gone through some growing pains with that this year, but Mary was sharing, she's not here tonight, some preliminary results of that we're feeding over 50% more students this year for breakfast than what we were at this time last year. And so I want to personally thank the staff for allowing that to come into your classroom. I know it's not the easiest thing, but we have a significant number of our students who don't have access to breakfast at home. And because we've shifted that here, we're providing that for all of our students. Our bus loading and unloading zone, that definitely went, I think without being said, that needed to be upgraded, and it was done. And I appreciate all of the help that we get from staff in the morning and afternoons getting our students on. We are getting students in and out very quickly. We're getting our parents in and out safely. Our maintenance staff did a lot of work getting that developed and moving that along as well. Our larger cafeteria, which we expanded that, dropped the ceiling, the sound volume, from what I've been told, is completely different when the kids are in there. We're actually having band in there. They have a place, and they leave the doors open, and it's not interrupting the classes down the hallway, if that tells you how that's controlling the sound in there. And then we've had a couple assemblies in there, and when you have 400 kindergarten through third graders all screaming at the top of their lungs, and it still deafens the sound. And by being able to hold assemblies in there, we're able to keep the rest of the building functioning. We're not taking up the gym space to do assemblies, things like that, which has been another asset that was happened over the summer. And then we have several new staff members, especially in the 4-6 area, that I think have been very positive assets to our team. And for all the teachers who have been around for a while, I want to thank you for welcoming them onto our staff, because especially when you're going in someplace new, I think we've faced a couple challenges here at the beginning with some issues they've dealt with, and seeing the rally behind them truly showed what Madison Plains is all about. So once again, I'm very proud to be there. Some of the things that we've done that I would like to highlight that our staff can kind of celebrate where we are at that part. When we had our Green and Gold Day contest, Mr. Miller and I went around, and we had a hard time judging our classrooms, because I think the most we had was 3 students in a class that wasn't dressed in green and gold, and that is because of the staff supporting and celebrating with them on that day. We have a lot of staff who have all received their PACS training, and I believe that's made a huge difference. I'm going to go actually over here the next 3 days to Dayton, that they're sending us with a conjunction with myself and someone from London, because it is a county-wide move. They're about to start pulling in West Jeff and Jonathan Ulmer into the program, and we're receiving a lot of funding from our juvenile court system as well, who wants to become more involved in our schools. And when you walk around and you see staff with harmonicas, we're not just playing them songs, but it's pretty powerful when you watch the harmonica blow and 400 to 500 students get quiet very quickly. But that isn't because of the magical harmonica, it's because of the magic of what the staff has done to follow through with fidelity. Establishing routines. When we've had staff out, there have been times I've had to go in and cover classes, which I don't mind doing. I don't mind being in there, but what has been very evident to me are the routines that have been set up in the classrooms. I was in a second grade classroom the other day, and the students were like, "No, Mrs. LeGault, this is how we do it, and this is what happens." And we're talking about a bunch of 7- and 8-year-olds holding each other accountable and moved on. And you would think, "No, put this away, do that." 5-10 minutes, no, it happened in 2. And that is due to the staff establishing those routines. So those are definitely appreciated as well. To allow for when we used to have indoor recess, which luckily Lucky on Wood have only had it twice this year, the weather's held out very nicely. So we did have to adjust our schedule to open up the cafeteria or the gym so our students can actually run around instead of being stuck in the classroom for indoor recess. And so the specials teachers have a longer break in the middle of the day. They've been going into classrooms. They came up with ideas on this is how we can support the rest of the staff. And then their newest initiative is working with 4th through 6th grade. because recess time isn't always the best time for every kid. So they've created clubs, and I was just talking to Jesse about it, different clubs. They're fitness clubs, art clubs, music clubs, technology clubs that the kids can do during their lunch and recess. And out of about 300 kids, we have over 100 who have expressed interest. And once again, not something I've said, hey, go do this. This is where the staff is coming together saying, our kids need this. So that's another great celebration for us down there. And then I definitely want to commend our office staff, which includes, I see Bobby's back here, and Tanya, and the rest of the office staff. Is the level of professionalism that was handled when we've been dealing with all of our rashes and all the jokes that we had to kind of come, you had to kind of laugh at times, because if not, I think they were going to go insane. But the professionalism that they dealt with parents and with students and the teachers, as soon as they notice something, saying, we need to react. And you might have walked in at one point in time and there may have been 30 kids in the office being checked and in lines and people moving students around. But I believe that's why we got such a good handle on what happened and why we handled things well. And I've heard from other districts, people I know in other districts saying, you know what, I appreciate that your school, your students, your staff put the kids first. So thank you definitely to them, because that was a tireless couple of weeks that's still going on. Some of our current happenings, you saw on the website, we're involved right now in a Make a Difference contest, kind of a monetary award that we're working towards winning a wishing well trophy. That's going to be a rotating trophy starting annually that will go around the county. So all of the elementaries in Madison County are involved. Right now, the kids are bringing in their change and filling little pumpkins, and every day they're coming down, and we're filling 5-gallon buckets with money at the moment. The kids get off the bus in the morning, and they'll be like, look, this is, look at all the change I took out of my piggy bank, because I want to help somebody. And all of the money that we raise at Madison Plains is going back into our community, into our food pantries. So a lot of our money is going to be going down to the Mount Sterling Community Center, which does provide food to our families, which I think is also a great place to be too. Next Friday, October 30th, will be our day before Halloween, where we'll be having our harvest parties. And I met yesterday with Mr. Curtis up at the high school and some of our FFA students. You know, we do have this great opportunity of having our 712 right next door, and they're going to come down. They're putting together activities about harvest and helping to educate our younger students. And putting together there, he asked me, he said, what do you want us to do? And I said, well, let's talk about it. He said, can our students take the responsibility and the ownership of educating your younger kids? And I said, if that's what they want to do, then by all means, go right ahead. So they're developing that routine. I think Mr. Hoffman went out and pulled corn yesterday so the kids can see unshelled corn and what that looks like. Because although we do live in a rural environment, a lot of our kids haven't had exposure to that. So those are some great things with that. That's when we'll be also talking about more about the MP Strong and how that's going to look for our building and for our students. I would encourage you, if you have time over the next week or so, they don't have to be done until next week, but slowly the staff, actually they're doing it pretty quickly, they're decorating doors, and I've had probably 10 parents who've been in volunteering at different times saying, you know how fun it is to walk down the hallway and see different decorations on the doors, and the kids are very engaged with it, putting up different just fun holiday decorations to add some color and excitement to the hallways as they go. And then I know Mr. Detweiler talked about Veterans Day coming up and our Raise the Flag, and he and I have begun some communication on that part. How can we get our kids involved? How can we get our community involved as we are raising our flag for the first time out front? And I know Mrs. Rapp's class on Friday, when they were putting up the pole, they were standing there. They took that as a learning opportunity. I walk over and their windows are open and they're discussing pulleys and levers, and the kids are asking questions as they're raising that out in the front. And so they had their windows open and they were filled with questions about what was happening. So that was another great piece there. Something else I would like to celebrate and let the staff know and the board know that I appreciate. So we did have our PD yesterday on the RTI process. We had 4 K-6 teachers and 3 712 teachers that went to some very intensive professional development that they've started. We brought that back to the district. They're going to continue with that next week. We have 2 more intense days. And being able to say, you know what, here's some things we need as a district. Can you help us find that, and can we get that supported? And so that's where that push came from. It didn't come from me saying, this is what we need, or Dr. Unger saying it, or Karen saying. This came from the staff saying, this is what we need. So the staff being able to advocate. And the other piece I would like to highlight, we did have our day on October 9th where everybody was supposed to stay home, stay far away from school, right? We had already, myself and five teachers had already signed up for a professional development opportunity. And I came back later on that evening, it was probably about 6:30 in the evening, and I saw one of the teachers and she said, we're still all going tomorrow. And so when other people were home, we had five devoted teachers who gave up that day that they could have stayed home in their pajamas all day and been comfy. But I believe the ones that were there would agree that was probably some of the best professional development that we've been to. And it really takes us into where our next steps are as a building. Looking at the OIP process, we're really good at collecting data. And now that opportunity was giving us strategies on what do we do with the data? How do we impact students and how do we get to move forward? So all throughout that day, we had conversations not only with the information they were giving us, but then how can we take this back? How can we get this implemented in our building right away? And I think I sent Mr. Detweiler at least two emails that day about, did you realize that I have five staff members here who came completely on their own and I had nothing to do with that? I mean, it was just truly that they said, this is what our students need. So they came, and I want to make sure that that was recognized. So it's nice that I had this so more people could hear that. And then using that information to feed into our BLT with our data goals, and then aligning all of our needs, starting to spend our staff meeting time. Our last staff meeting talked about how can we use data in the English language arts area to inform decisions, not only for this year, but also future years. And then the same thing was going on with our math teachers as well. So using that time in a little bit more structured way for us. And then I also just today went to a leadership academy and got results back that I want to thank the staff for publicly. I had 23 staff members who filled out a survey about me, a facilitative leadership, and it gave me a lot of feedback on what I can do to improve to help the building. So thank you to the 23 staff members who took the time to do that. Because sometimes we all have to be able to look at that and reflect so that we can move forward. So there's a lot of reflection going on in the K-6. There's a lot of conversations happening. And I appreciate the work they're putting in because I know it's tireless and it's hard. And there's a lot going on and we ask a lot. And every time you turn around, somebody's stepping up to the plate. So that's where we're at. Does anybody have any questions for me or any of the K-6 staff, since there's so many here to hear all these great things?
Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Kim, I do have one quick question. You said the PAX training?
PAX, P-A-X.
What does that stand for?
Nothing. Oh. It really doesn't.
Really? Okay.
It really is, for once it's not an acronym.
Because everything usually is. So I think we've all asked that.
Although you'll see PAX GBG, which GBG stands for Good Behavior Game.
Okay, excellent.
But with that, it's a way to kind of monitor student behaviors. It really is it's behavior modification for the students so they can start to self-monitor and change their behavior. And I'm glad you asked that to make me stop for a minute. We've had somebody coming in from the county in our classrooms regularly, weekly, sometimes daily. And I got stopped by Mrs. Cutler the other day saying, I have never seen a more dedicated group of teachers. And she's been in education for 34 years. She said, it doesn't matter what class I walk into, I'm seeing the same types of things happening, and it is a very dedicated group of teachers who have kids at the number one priority. And that's somebody who's not affiliated with Madison Plains at all. They're just coming in to help us with the integrity of the programs. Thanks for asking this.
Dr. Unger. I'd also like to congratulate the 712 staff on the hard work and determination you've had last year and this year. It's evident in our test scores, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit. It's also evident when we talk about integrating our staff, the junior high and the high school staff. As we put the group together, we knew we were going to have some challenges, but it's been pretty smooth. We got a lot of work yet to do, but I think we've come a long way in starting to see ourselves as all being there to help students push students forward. Our focus has been to create a culture of high expectation and high achievement. We've done this in multiple ways. We do this through the TBT process. We do this through our PBIS process. We do this with our attitudes and how we approach our students and always provide them opportunities and always to push themselves forward to achieve more. And there's a few things that I'm going to go through to talk about how we do that. One is College Credit Plus. We'll talk a little bit about Assignment Hall. We implemented a student advisory council so that we can start to give students voice and some feedback as far as what they think of the school and what we need to do and what we're doing good and what we need to improve on. Congressman Stivers is actually working with us to provide a Student of the Month program, which we were going to have the first one tonight, but she couldn't be here, so we're going to hold that off for the next board meeting. College Credit Plus, we've got some of our group of students up here in this picture that are participating in this program, and our two instructors. Our hope is for next year that we're going to expand this program more into the math and into the English world so that we can offer students actual transcripted college credit here. Go ahead and get the next slide. This year, we have Western Civilization 1 and 2. We have American History 1 and 2. Chemistry. We have 44 students. Some of them are duplicates within these classes, but we have 44 students who are enrolled in these classes, and they have the possibility of actually earning 21 semester hours of transcripted college credit. If you think about the financial impact on those families of that, so that's a wonderful opportunity for these students to actually earn college credit while they attend Madison Plains. They also get their high school graduation credits fulfilled by taking these classes. In order to qualify for these, the students have to obtain a non-remediation score on the ACT or go back and take the AccuPlacer or another test so that they can qualify for college classes. We have some students that are doing things off campus, but we would like to have that opportunity right here at Madison Plains so that students don't have to drive as far and they can still participate in the high school activities while they're obtaining their college credits. Assignment Hall. We implemented this program last year because we heard from parents and from students that they shouldn't be receiving zeros for so many assignments and they needed opportunities in order to get their work turned in because we were getting a lot of student failures because of work not turned in, not necessarily what kids need. First 5 weeks that we implemented this, and last week was week five, we didn't do it for 2 or 3 weeks because we didn't have many assignments out there. Week one, we had 129 students that were, this is 712 now, it's not just 912. We had 129 students that were referred to Assignment Hall with 228 missing assignments. Week two, we had 93 students with 136 missing assignments. Week three, we had 49 with 59 missing assignments. Week four, it jumped again. It's kind of interesting to see how assignments go out, when their due dates are, and so on, kind of correspond with this. We had 131 students with 194 assignments missing. And week five, we had, which was last week, we had 60 students. This was the last week of the 9 weeks. We had 60 students with 76 assignments out. A total of, in this 5 weeks, 693 missing assignments were referred with multiple students. What we found is by doing this, student failures due to missing assignments is reduced.
Do those numbers, so if a student from week one to week two still hasn't got his assignments in, does that carry those into the week two numbers? So the week two numbers are additional.
Those are different assignments.
Okay.
But, you know, numbers seem kind of big, but if you think about it, how many assignments, you know, we got approximately 600 students with you know, 7 or 8 classes a day, and how many assignments are given in a week's time for that, that's not a huge number. What we find is that some of these students are repeat offenders each week. We find that some of these students are students that don't have resources at home to complete some of these things, such as computers and internet access and stuff like that. We have some that aren't motivated to get their work turned in, and this serves as a motivator. We are doing it during the school day on Friday, because we found that last year some of the kids that needed this and needed computer time also couldn't get transportation home. So we're going to continue to monitor the progress of this program, see how it works. What we found when we moved it to the first lunch, period 5, 6, and 7, there's some a little motivation there to get their assignments done before their lunch period comes up. So they tend to work pretty hard. They don't want to sit in there all day long. Mr. Weiss supervises it, keeps them on track where they get their work done. Research has proven that this is a practice that should show increase in student achievement immediately. And that was presented to us at the conference we went to this summer. So, any questions? Okay. Student Advisory Council. This is interesting. We have a group of students that we're going to meet once each 9 weeks, and they have the opportunity to put the items on the agenda. We set a pre-agenda ahead of time. I can put items on there, and I'm even going to ask for some staff if they want to put some items on there, and then we can receive some student feedback and we have a conversation about what's going on. The positives, they saw that we had good teachers. It said some of them thought some of them weren't so great, but for the most part, we have really good teachers. They like the new time schedule that we're on. They see that the community involvement in this school is a positive, and they believe that the people that work for the district and in the community care about them, which is positive. Conversations and improvement, things that they were concerned with, college preparedness. Both pushing them academically as well as starting to work them towards some maturity where they can handle being independent their freshman year of college. And, you know, our seniors in the group were a little worried about how well they were going to handle that responsibility when there was nobody there to look after. Academic alignment. There was some concern in some programs, you know, how it flowed from grades 9 and 10 to 11 and 12 and so on, which was kind of higher level stuff. We don't necessarily think of students having some concerns over those things, but they were pointing out that these might be some weaknesses within our programs. Busing, all the busing issues we've had because we don't have enough bus drivers. Their athletic events being canceled, they're, you know, moving things around, different start times, stop times. It was really stressing them out. Building opening time. They didn't like the fact that we didn't open the building and lock the building at 7:30 in the morning. We had some discussion over that, and they actually brought some options to the table that we're going to discuss as an administrative team and see what we can do. Traffic in the parking lot. That's kind of interesting. Everybody sees the other person as the problem in the parking lot. Probably a little bit of everybody. Everybody's in a hurry in the mornings. Sometimes things get stacked up and traffic gets backed up, and they offered some suggestions towards taking care of some of those problems. And a lot of them had to do with arrival, departure time, stuff like that, as far as letting people in and out of the parking lot. And they were coming up with solutions, which was good. Season passes for students for athletic events, which was kind of different. There was some interest that they'd like to be able to buy a pass and get some into all athletic events for the year. Talked to Matt Mason about some possibilities there. Positives with this, you know, we've created a culture of high expectations. We've created some stability there. The teachers have been very proactive about having certain routines in their classrooms, and students know what's expected of them, and they're clear and precise with those things. Now that that's been established, the next step is we need to provide some student voice and some student ownership in their learning. And this is one opportunity they'll have to give a voice to what happens with their school system. Questions?
Which students are on the committee?
I don't have the whole list in front of me right now.
How are they selected?
We've had some staff members that actually suggested people that we should put on there. We looked at them and make sure that they represented grades 9 through 12.
Is it equal representation for each grade?
There are two more seniors than there are in the other grade levels. There's a little more senior representation than freshman representation. Is how that works out. If there's a group that might be missing and we want to try to take care of that for the next meeting, it might be some of our lower achieving students. Because when people recommend, they tend to recommend.
Matt, when you're talking about the membership there, and you said there's two more seniors.
Yeah.
I don't think you answered Bob's question, in my opinion. Is it equal amount? Is there, say, four freshmen and four sophomores?
Two freshmen.
There's two freshmen.
Two juniors.
And four seniors.
Okay. Yeah.
How often do you meet?
Once per quarter.
Okay.
Now, they can call a meeting if they would like to have, if there's a special something coming up. They can call one. The idea was we didn't want to be meeting all the time. Mm-hmm.
I think I agree with you. If you have staff selecting the students on the advisory council, you're going to get an upper-tier student. I think it would be nice if it was more equally distributed.
And also thought that maybe it's good if maybe we mix it up. Maybe it's not the same.
Yeah, that's good.
Maybe the same group. Okay. Once we went through the process the first time, there's been some ideas about how we could mix that up, change it up a little bit.
Yeah, you may not want to switch all the students in one fell swoop.
Yeah, you want some. Maybe the senior group stays there to provide some guidance, and then I move some other people in and out.
You still have student council?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
And how much are they involved in this?
This is independent of the student council.
But they're elected. Student council is elected by the rest of the students for that class.
Yes,
right?
They are.
I think maybe. If they're getting into student council, they might be looking at being on, school board or being on a community.
And we utilize the student council for some of the same things, too. The idea is we try to get something a little more independent of popularity.
I think it would be nice to give them an opportunity to get there and try to hone some of their bargaining skills or their collaborative effort stuff, too.
Yeah. Matter of fact, the idea kind of came out of student council because we had some concerns over the grading policy. And our student council president couple people come talk to me about the concerns and thought, well, maybe we just need to do this more.
I like the idea of this being separate and independent of the student council. The student council has a function they serve, and I think this is a different function.
Okay.
I like it.
That's the last one. Any questions? I mean, we could go on all night about the happenings in the high school, the junior high, and the elementary and the intermediate. Just wanted to highlight a few things that are going on and to give you an idea of what we're looking for.
You were talking about College Credit Plus. That's taken over for the dual enrollment that we used to have.
Yeah, you don't have dual enrollment anymore. You don't have PSEO, post-secondary option. All that stuff's going to get, it's kind of morphed together into a College Credit Plus program. They tried to take some of the better aspects of the two programs, and there's a lot of opportunities there.
Okay.
And it does also create us some challenges as far as tracking kids.
My question is, we had quite a few teachers, well, it was like five or six teachers that were accredited with the dual enrollment, and I can't remember the college now.
They changed the requirements.
Well, mm-hmm. I was thinking if it's going to be a different accreditation, then
yeah,
might need training someplace
else. It's a little more stringent. You got to have 18 hours in content above the semester level or above the bachelor's degree level. Okay, which means that when you take the classes, for instance, if you're math. It can't be an EDU prefix. It can't be math education. It has to be, algebra, geometry. It has to be a math prefix in there. but for those 18 hours. Same way with English. It cannot be English education. It has to be in content in English. Or a master's degree. You know, if you have a master's degree in that area. We had some interesting things come back when we had transcripts evaluated last year. We had one teacher that was qualified to teach theology and stuff like that. We had, it's possible you could have an elementary teacher that might be certified that could teach, you know, college level English, but not maybe not somebody in the high school. So the key is where your master degree is and how many hours in content you have, which is going to kind of change how we look at things. So we're asking, hopefully there's some people in our English and our math department that's willing to pick up those extra classes and be certified so that we can keep those classes here.
Are there multiple colleges that the accreditation for these classes is accepted at, or is it just one particular college?
Any accredited Ohio institution that offers those credits above the bachelor's level, those courses would count towards the accreditation. What we got to do, we take the teacher's transcripts and we send it, we partner with Southern State on this, we send it to Southern State, they evaluate the transcripts and say this course counts, this course counts, this course counts, and if they have 18, then they're in. Same way in any university in Ohio.
I'm referring more to the students once they pass that.
Once they pass that, they can go to any public institution in the state of Ohio and they have to take it, including Ohio State. Any public institution. Now, if it's a private, that's a different thing.
Thank you.
I think I'm off your mic.
We've shot the budget in the house.
Is it? Any more questions?
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. I'd have Kim and Matt go ahead and stay up if you would and turn it over to Mrs. Grigsby to talk about our data.
To share with you this evening. I did give each of you a paper copy, but I believe Mr. Mustang is going to project that here. The information that I'm providing with you tonight is simply preliminary data. The state of Ohio is actually not going to be releasing report cards until January this school year because of all the shifts with testing. We got to see our first glimpse of numbers last week. And so what I was able to see is what I shared with you this evening. And this is only part of what would be on our state report card. This refers to the achievement section of the report card. It is, and I say it is preliminary numbers because that data hasn't been looked over as far as, you know, were students enrolled here for 120 days or not. But usually that only fluctuates within a couple percentage points. So what you see in front of you is what our achievement rates were in every test, state test that we took last school year. And that means what percentage of our students passed each test compared to what the state indicator will be. You'll remember in past years, such as with the OAA, we were always compared to that 75% mark or an 80% mark, where there was one set percentage the state was looking at all schools getting. With the new tests, they did that differently this year, and it's based on what the state average is. So any school district that meets or exceeds the state average would be considered to get an indicator. The paper that you have in front of you is what we anticipate are the indicators that we're going to meet based on the preliminary results we got to see last week. If you go through the column here, we'll show you what it takes to make the indicator. No indicator is going to be worth more than 80% with the exception of 11th graders taking the OGT. There wasn't any state average that was above 80% except one. And that was in freshmen taking a geometry test. This column shows you what our passing rates were and whether or not we anticipate making that indicator. So what you will see is that we are expecting to make 88% of our indicators. Last school year, I think we made somewhere around 62% of our indicators. Some of those things to note, to point out to you, is there are 9 of those areas that we were above the state average by double digits. That's exciting news. Because especially when you have a system based on state averages, that means our data played into what that state average was, and we were responsible in part, along with other school districts, of raising what that state average was. So we are very pleased with the results. I am happy to share that with you this evening on behalf of the hard work our students and, of course, our teachers put in last school year. The back side of your form just looks at that in performance categories, where limited, basic, proficient, accelerated, and advanced. Clearly, you know me, there's always more work to be done, and we'll be looking into this data more deeply to find out what that work is that is yet to be done. And of course, we have already identified a few of those areas, but as we get more and more information from the state, I will share that, be happy to share that with you.
I have a dumb question.
Uh-huh.
Where's the measurements for grade 9?
Okay, grade 9 is the end of course assessments at the bottom.
Okay.
Because of PARC and AIR being those new tests, those are what are now replacing OGT for the current freshmen and sophomores. So only freshmen took those tests last year.
Okay.
So when you see American History end of course, American History end of course exam, English 1, Geometry, and Physical Science, those were all only freshmen taking those tests. American government is governed by a different law, and so any grade level student could take that test. And so those were our 11th, actually that was all 11th and 12th graders from our district. Okay. Are there other questions that I can answer for you?
We've talked about this before.
And I knew you would be anxious to see these results.
Yeah, and thank you. my, what can we do as a board, not just talking to the state board or talking to people at ODE, but we're getting the preliminary results in October. Mm-hmm. We don't get the final results until January.
That's this school year. What we have been told, and I always preface this, is what the information that I have as of today is, we will have this coming spring's results by June 30th. So it was this transition school year that all this was
pushed
off. This has
been one of the things that has been really frustrating for me, seeing, that, it takes us halfway through the year before, we've already started.
Right, that isn't how it normally is, and it's not supposed to be how it will be in future years. It's just this school year. One other thing I should note, though, is what you're seeing there, I gave you a type of test it was. Several of those are labeled PARC. Ohio's not going to do PARC anymore after this school year because there was such great concern about the difficulty of the test. But we were above state average in every PARC test. That's good news as well. But it will be an AIR test, an AIR test like our science and social studies. We've seen blueprints of what those tests are going to be, and it's similar to what they were.
Now, I know that doesn't stand for peace in Latin. It's probably an acronym, so what does that stand for?
Which one? PARC?
AIR.
Oh, AIR. American Institute of Research. They're the people who write that test.
Mm-hmm. Gotta be one in every group.
Sorry. The reason why I asked the three of these people to stay up here is we need to talk about a little bit of history. Karen talked about it a little bit yesterday at our end service. I wanted to talk about a couple other people that were involved. Race to the Top was the catalyst that got the discussion about change at Madison Plains to begin. A lot of people put in a lot of time, a lot of hard work. That flowed over into the improvement process. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Mr. Hall's, the one that said we're going to change what we're doing at Madison Plains. He agreed with Race to the Top, he implemented the instructional coaches, he supported having 4 of them at a time when he didn't think that we could afford it. So to not mention him tonight would be an absolute travesty. He started this path that we're on now, and it's our job to make sure we stay on that path. if he was here, he would say, good enough is the enemy of great. And I said at the beginning of this year, this district is going to be a great district. We're going to continue on with the hard work that we've done. The teachers, just amazing work. The three people up here are the architects and the managers and the enforcers of me moving the change forward. They're doing an outstanding job. The evidence is on the wall. The impact committee, if you recall, impact was instrumental on working on the MPIP. So we owe those community members a great deal of thanks as well. And the Board of Education, not only the sitting members who were ones prior to you, Mr. Swanger, who's already left for the evening, those folks deserve a great deal of gratitude. They supported the change, and it's been expensive. And I don't say that lightly. I don't say that we shouldn't have spent the money. We should, because we're seeing the results. But we invested in what we needed to invest in, and we'll continue to do that. And these results are showing the fruition of our work. And we're going to continue on and continue to get better scores, better achievement for our kids, because that's what we committed to. So for all of you and you, I congratulate you and I thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, I would request that this time we take a 10-minute moment for executive session under item 4.
Okay. Second?
You have to make a motion.
I have to make a motion. Yeah. Okay. I make a motion to enter into executive session at 8:32 p.m. for the purpose of one or more of the following under Ohio Revised Code 121.22G. Section 4, preparing for conducting or reviewing negotiations or bargaining session with public employees.
I'll second that.
Discussion? There'll be no action taken, and we will 10 minutes.
There will be action taken?
Okay, 8:32 p.m.
I'd ask we recess across the hall. We've got a vote. Instructional coaches.
Call, roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0. We're in executive session.